Okay, so specialty mental health probation for probationers with severe mental illness. I want to acknowledge a number of folks on my research team, Stacey Bergen, Tanya Van Dantse, Amy Wilson, and Marilyn Getze. Also, the project is supported by funding from the North Carolina Governor's Crime Commission and also the North Carolina Department of Public Safety. Unfortunately, I don't have any financial conflicts to announce. I wish I did. All right, so today's agenda, we'll talk a little bit about the scope of mental health criminal justice. I'll give a brief overview of statewide training initiatives that I and my research team have been working on in the great state of North Carolina. We'll review baseline data from a project I'll describe, and then we'll discuss lessons learned. Also, question and answers at the end. Also, feel free to interrupt me as we go. I'm fine with that. All right, so criminal justice and mental health. As many of you may know, the public mental health system has really shrunk in the last 50 years. Used to be that large state hospitals provided both the care and treatment. So if you think about the care part of it, state hospitals provided housing and laundry and meals, and then treatment in addition. Well, now, and I say transinstitutionalization, as many do, rather than deinstitutionalization, folks with severe mental illness are now spread out all over the community, different systems, different agencies over which mental health authorities have little control. And most importantly, the care and the treatment are now separate, for good or for bad. So cliches that I've overused in my short and less than illustrious career, but now make much more sense to me after I've been doing this for 10 years or so. Criminal justice system is now the new frontier for mental health services research. We see RFAs from time to time for justice-involved persons with severe mental illness and interventions to serve them. Also, the fates of persons with mental illness are closely intertwined with the policies of the criminal justice system. You often see this locally when a new ordinance is passed, and it affects folks with severe mental illness disproportionately. Criminal justice system is truly the place of last resort for dangerous and hard to manage persons with mental illness. And to a large extent, the criminal justice system has become a public health outpost for persons with severe mental illness. I'll talk a little bit about that. Linda, you want to disagree with any of those points?
No, I'll tell you.
All right, daily number of persons with mental illness in the criminal justice system. At any given time, there's over a quarter of a million folks in prisons, over 130,000 in jails, and 1.3 million folks in probation. This is juxtaposed. Hey, just the IT. We're doing great? Yeah, absolutely. I'm doing fine. I don't know about the audience. How many of you appreciate that I use the word juxtaposed? Anybody? Yes? Usually I only have one or two. Thank you in the back. Juxtapose that with only about 54,000 folks in our state hospitals in any given time. The red oval is just to demonstrate that I can do a red oval in PowerPoint. All right, I'll let that marinate for a moment. Now, this figure is probably closer to a million because, as we all know, jails are quick turnaround, short stay facilities. So actually a million or more folks with SPMI cycle in and out of our country's jails each year. How many of you have been in jail before? Nope. Stop that. I actually had a student in one of my classes that I was teaching raise his hand and begin to describe why, and I had to stop him. You know, that's information we don't need. You know, anytime a person with mental illness is involved in a crime, particularly a media sensationalized crime, the public outcry is that all people with mental illness are violent. These are older data now, but data that come from King County Jail that just shows over the course of a five-year period, among all folks who are incarcerated, only about 2% of the folks represented there are folks with severe mental illness who committed violent felonies. So it's just a small slice of what we have there. Typically, these folks are involved in the justice system for minor crimes. This is at the charge level, but these are the same data that I just showed from King County Jail. And as you can see, 71% were in for minor crimes and only 21% were in for violent crimes. And the minor crimes, public intoxication, public urination, loitering, panhandling, the kind of things that I plan on doing this evening. I'm here all week. Thank you. All right, complex needs of justice-involved persons. Have you never heard me do this before, Linda?
I've heard that one before.
Yeah. That's an oldie but a good. Complex needs of justice-involved persons with mental illness. Persons with SMI in general have complex needs, even more so for justice-involved. Multiple stigmas, engagement and advocacy is harder, barriers to housing and employment. Access to evidence-based practices are a challenge for folks with SMI in general, but the gulf is even wider for justice-involved consumers. These are folks, as many of us know, nobody really wants to serve. So now we have a number of policies and interventions at the interface of criminal justice and mental health designed to increase access to Medicaid. We have forensic assertive community treatment, jail diversion programs, crisis intervention training, mental health courts, specialty mental health probation, and so forth. All of these services are really designed to connect folks back to community mental health services. The thinking being, if we can just get them services, they will be kept out of the community or out of the jails and prisons and probation and parole. However, there's another school of thought that it's not just about services, that folks with severe and persistent mental illness have criminogenic risks that are similar for non-SMI folks who are involved in the justice system. Many of you are probably familiar with these. These are the 8 criminogenic risks. The 4 on top that are highlighted are the big 4: antisocial behavior, antisocial personality, cognition, antisocial associates, substance abuse, family and marital conflict, low levels of education, employment, and lack of appropriate leisure or recreational activity. So this has implications for interventions if this is your orientation for why folks with severe mental illness are involved in the criminal justice system. You would focus on the top 4 in particular, so changing the criminal thinking patterns of folks with severe mental illness. So as I just highlighted, there's a number of criminal thinking interventions out there that now are widely used. They're widely used in the justice system. They're less widely used for folks with severe mental illness. There's probably some adaptations that need to go on, but you've probably heard of many of these: thinking for change, moral recognition therapy. I had to look up the word recognition when I just saw this. Does anybody know what recognition? It means, Linda?
Change,
yeah. And then reasoning and rehabilitation. So these are now being applied to folks with severe mental illness, but one question that needs to be addressed is, how do they need to be adapted? Also, is there a synergy between mental health and criminogenic risks? You notice mental illness was not a criminogenic risk, but is there a synergy between the two? Well, you could say there's some evidence for this synergy in that probationers with mental illness have higher rates of rearrest, suspensions, and probation revocations. Also, here are some data from the state of North Carolina. I do a lot of work there with probation, parole, prisons, and local jails. And the state has adopted a risk and needs assessment that tries to capture these criminogenic risks. So these are probation data. All probationers, when they enter the system, answer these questions. And you'll see substance use, antisocial personality traits, dysfunctional family history, self-control, antisocial values. And you'll see that in all cases, SMI folks have these criminogenic risks at higher levels than folks who are on probation who don't have severe mental illness. So again, speaks to maybe there's this synergy going on. If you think about it, who is substance use, untreated substance use, going to be worse for? Someone who's living with schizophrenia or someone who is not living with schizophrenia? You can guess at what the answer to that question would be. Same with prison inmates. Here are the same criminogenic risks in all cases except antisocial personality traits. Prisoners with SMI have higher rates of these. I only have 5 minutes left? Holy cow. Okay. This is further borne by evidence that folks with severe mental illness in prison are more likely to have infractions and have more of them. So these are the average number of infractions in the first 6 months of incarceration in a prison. And here are the top 10 infractions. I've done most of these today. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Now, my friends in the prison, I enjoy working with them, and they really are trying to do a great job. They get very excited, though. They say, hey, Gary, we've got a new program we want to show show you our new innovative outpatient treatment pod. That's great. Here's our recovery center. Here's our inpatient unit, right? And here's our transitional housing unit. Of course, the joke is not lost on you. It's still a prison with bars and not a good environment. So specialty mental health probation, statewide training. Now, is that 5 minutes presentation?
Leaving, just presentation.
Leaving time for, can I eat into my question and answer period?
It's up to you.
All right. With a grant from the Governor's Crime Commission and funding from the Department of Public Safety, there's two aspects to this project. First, to train and provide more information about mental health to all probation officers and other stakeholders across the state, and launching two specialty mental health probation pilots. Specialty mental health probation is nothing new. Folks have been doing it quite a long time. It's one of those practices that have far outpaced the evidence, though. So statewide training, this was in the form of basically voiceover PowerPoint modules, and there's six training modules that all probation officers in the state now receive, over 2,100 folks, using and interpreting the risk and needs assessment. That's the state's measures that I mentioned earlier. SMI 101, psychiatric medications. It's not uncommon for a probationer to dump a paper bag full of medications on the desk of a probation officer, and they have no idea what's what. And so far we created, which they really enjoyed, laminated things. So we created a two-sided laminate that lists all the medications, what they're for, side effects, and so forth. So PTSD, personality disorders and other disorders, crisis response, local services, and self-care. Also, we've implemented, as I said, two specialty mental health caseloads. Typically, a specialty mental health caseload includes the following components: probationers, an exclusive caseload of probationers living with mental illness, reduced caseload size to about 40 versus anywhere from 70 to 120, ongoing officer training about mental health, problem solving, supervision orientation, and greater interface with external resources. Here in the pilot in North Carolina, we added ongoing motivational interview and training and supervision by a licensed clinical social worker. Also, community capacity building. Does that give me extra time? You looked like you looked impressed by that.
I am.
Okay. Ongoing supervision with a licensed clinical social worker. Basically, she sits with the probation officers individually, and they talk about cases. So they get a heavy dose of the mental health side. Lots of implementation issues. There's an extra executive steering committee. There's a research implementation team. Each of these is a randomized controlled trial where we're randomly assigning probationers with severe mental illness to either specialty mental health probation or standard probation. So there's a whole research implementation side of this. Training for the specialty officers, which is ongoing. Also educating officers in management within DPS, both on the research side and on the specialty probation side. A lot of education, just getting them to understand what severe and persistent mental illness is and so forth. We also have community capacity building meetings, which is a feature of this, where we bring all the stakeholders together once a month. We bring the MCO in, we bring local mental health providers, we bring probation. All right, I got it. All right, so eligibility for the specialty mental health probation RCT, you got to have SMI. We do multi-international neuropsychiatric instrument. We do this assessment to screen all offenders to make sure they have one of these following four disorders. Typically, I don't include PTSD in my definition of SMI, but the state really wanted it in there. And when you work with state criminal justice partners, you sometimes got to be flexible and accommodate what they want. At least 1 year left on probation, they can't already be on a specialized caseload. Matter of fact, one of the biggest challenges now is the combination of sex offense, SMI, and justice involvement. Nobody knows what to do with those folks, and they have to be volunteers. We've enrolled 102 probationers, data collection is ongoing, battery of standardized measures.
And now you're eating into your question.
Stop. The randomization is working. Here's just some baseline characteristics for the most part. It's a challenge doing this research in criminal justice settings, as many of you can attest to. Lessons learned working in CJ settings, courts, jails, and probations. They are all about public safety first, so you can't go in with your public health first, mental health first flag waved. You've got to meet them where they're at and use their language and make sure you're not doing anything to compromise public safety. They are eager for help if it's the right kind. You have to get relationships, and then you can read through the rest. All right. Sorry, I ran over.
So now we still have some time.
Yeah, absolutely.
At least 4 minutes for questions.
4 minutes for questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Gary?
I've stunned my audience into silence. Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about the outcome of your research so far?
No. Yeah, no outcomes yet. So I've got 6-month outcomes on 75% of my sample. It's been much slower, slower than even I anticipated in terms of enrolling folks. It's just taken a long time. Part of it because it's voluntary. Probation is used to telling people, oh, you're going to a specialty caseload. But here, because it's a research study, there's an IRB involved, everything is voluntary. So it's been slow. I have outcomes, but I just didn't want to present them here until I had a full set. But they will be forthcoming. Yes?
I have a question about the population.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned 31% female and 15% male.
Yeah. Yeah, and the justice population now is largely male anyway. So it's probably 15% female, 85% male in the general population. When you overlay an SMI, the female proportion does rise a little bit, but that is pretty typical. What do you think, Linda?
Women in the justice system are more likely to have mental illnesses. I think it has to do with deviance, that to be criminal justice involved is more unusual for women than for men.
Yeah. Great.
Can I ask you one?
Please do. Only risk, if I can answer it.
The risk profile that you do for, are they done to establish whether or not to be on the caseload or whether or what special conditions or levels?
The risk and needs, that's a good question. So the risk and needs profile is North Carolina's strategy of assigning probationers supervision level based on risk and needs. So higher scores on risk and needs get a higher level of supervision. So ones, twos, and threes are the highest supervision level. Those get the most intense. And my study participants are limited to one, twos, and threes. Fours and fives can be unsupervised probation or once every 6 months. So what we're targeting here for this study is the most seriously mentally ill folks plus the highest criminogenic risk or need. Yeah. Follow-up question to that?
I think I just checked the time. So.
All right.
Anybody else? We have another minute.
All right. Great.